This episode is brought to you by CBS All Access. If you don't already subscribe to CBS All Access, please use our affiliate link by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS. Using our affiliate link gives us a little credit, which helps us to keep bringing you great content. U.S. residents only.
And welcome to episode 58 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And this morning we will be covering season 3, episode 11, titled Sukal. But before we get started, we have additional feedback on season 3, episode 10, Terra Firma Part 2. So let's open hailing frequencies. Our first bit of feedback is a voicemail that we still don't know what happened. I mentioned it on the podcast, but Trey from Pittsburgh sent us in some feedback and he got it in plenty of time before the deadline. But for some reason, I don't know, it just went into the ether and we didn't get it until after we recorded like Saturday night. I don't know. Yeah. Both of us looked at it.
He sent it in time, but it didn't arrive in time.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, this time he sent in feedback and the same thing. It came later. And I don't know why, but it did. But this time we got it in time. But I don't know what's going on.
It's the internet.
Yeah.
I blame COVID. But,
yeah. All right. So anyway, late coming, but still... great voicemail coming from Trey. Here we go. First of two, by the way.
This is the Guardian of Forever.
No, hey guys, it's Trey from Pittsburgh. I would say that Terra Firma Part 2, ultimately for me, was a letdown. I don't know if I was so hyped up over the first one and that shock and awe factor is, you know, I'm a sucker for the shock and awe factor. So whenever, you know, you're not expecting it and you get it from the story arc, it's great. I can tell you I wasn't a fan of The Guardian of Time. I thought that was a big letdown for me. It left me with too many questions. I thought, okay, this is an easy way to give Georgiou her spinoff. You know, that's great. I can't wait for it, by the way, in the works. But I think that the way that you, Brian, you felt last, you thought the story arc was going to go a certain way and, you know, the Terran episode threw you off. Well, I really thought this Terran episode was going to go a certain way, and it threw me off the way that they resolved it in this part. I actually wrote a Star Trek script with my cousin about, you know, that called it the Neo-Terran Empire, but it was really cool. So I love that universe and the possibilities over there. When Georgiou finally captures Michael in Terra Firma Part 1 in the corridor, and Michael is losing it, "I betrayed you," and that crazy look in her eye, amazing acting. But when she was looking crazy and she said, "I'll betray you and I'll betray you again," and she did. I don't know. I guess I like that Georgiou changed and became a better soul and a better version of herself from being in the Prime universe. But I don't know, it felt like an ending to the Terran Empire on Discovery, at least for me. The fight scenes, though, were sweet. I thought that was awesome. I thought that whenever the sword went through Burnham and the blood shot out her back, that was an awesome effect. I think I saw Captain Killy kill somebody, maybe, I think. But it wasn't what I expected of her in that universe, at least, with a reputation that she has built, a feared, ruthless captain. I think Reno showing up in this episode was awesome with her licorice, her accessory. It bothered me that it sounded like it was stale, though. When I eat licorice, I don't want to hear it snap. I also wasn't a fan of the Georgiou goodbye memorial get together speeches. I thought that it was awkward. I understand that they wanted to give her a good send off and finalize her story, at least on the Discovery but it just felt awkward. I think it's more of a letdown because I know that I'm not going to see Georgiou for a while, if at all. But I just keep my fingers crossed that she'll be back in some capacity, in some trek, hopefully. But that's it. I really am looking forward to next week's episode and looking forward to finding out about the Burn, who will actually become first officer. Is Stamets an android? What was the stardate on Reno's Licorice? Where do I get a cool Bluetooth speaker like Book had? Hopefully we'll find out all these questions next week. Oh, and also, you know, the Burn.
Well, thank you so much, Trey. And it's good that you went to skip the telephone calls because this one came in much clearer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're going to have to look to see for voicemail a different mechanism because I think Google Voice isn't up to speed. Like the MP3 that you get out of it is such a poor quality that it's not good. It's nothing that you did. It's just the
probably the a combination quality. Of bad cell phone service and Google Voice not being able to record it as well as if you do a voice memo on your phone or something. So
maybe it's funny that
get rid of the Google Voice. I don't know.
I think what we may do is come up with some other way of getting in voicemails. Like there might be a Zoom option or, you know, Skype. Get a Skype number. I don't know, but we'll think about that.
Or we could do that SpeakPipe widget thing, maybe.
Yes. We're probably going to get SpeakPipe as well. So that'll be another method that you guys can send in feedback. But most people just use the feedback form, and that seems to work pretty well. It's funny that you were fully into episode 9, but not so much into episode 10 because it was the reverse of me.
I totally get that, though.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you were kind of like him, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
I was less into episode 10 than I was into episode 9. Mm. I think I liked the surprise because I was so surprised. I was like, oh, it's a surprise. I mean, don't get me wrong. Not all surprises are good, but that one just happened to be pleasant for me, I guess. I don't know.
I don't mind surprises, but for some reason, that one just took me aback. And I wasn't ready for it.
I don't know. I think that you don't like surprises because anytime you've been surprised that I've been aware of in the past, it has not been good. Which is why I told you how I felt about the episode previous to right now.
You know what, Ruthie? Mm. You are correct.
Hey, man, there's nothing wrong with not liking surprises. If you don't like surprises, you don't like them. Not everybody does.
I mean, I don't know. It may have something to do with Christmas is not my favorite time of the year. And I think maybe part of it has to do with the surprise of it. I don't like being surprised. I don't.
Makes sense.
I don't like being surprised. I would rather just get a gift card and let me pick my present. Don't give me anything. Just give me money.
I can understand that. Christmas can be stressful because if you get something that you're not particularly fond of, it's hard to act. Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
For some people, you know, I don't know. I mean, it's hard because on the one hand, oh, great. I've got something that I'll never use and it's just going to sit in my house and take up space. But on the other hand, you don't want to hurt the person's feelings who gave it to you. And no one likes to give a gift that isn't liked. So it can be stressful. So I completely understand that. Christmas can be stressful for a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny though, how some things work out. Like there are times though, when I've been surprised by a story and you know,
it was pleasant.
Yes. But, and it's not that this wasn't unpleasant. it was just unexpected. And
it's just you don't like surprises.
Well,
it's now, okay. Own up to it.
I'll say this, though. Like, what I was expecting was some resumption of the story about the burn and the story about the Federation and the Emerald Chain. And I got that in spades this episode. So this coming episode, I should say. So, you know, it in the end, we got back on track after this. So, you know, I suppose I shouldn't complain too much about it. And if it leads to a great, former Emperor Giorgio series around Section 31, I guess I will live with it. But at the time, it was rather shocking. And I also believe that my reaction would have been tempered, and it was tempered after watching it a second time. And unfortunately, I didn't get to do that when we recorded, and I think that affected my whole attitude towards it. So, but then again, you know, most people don't get to watch episodes more than once, or they don't want to. So, you know, I was kind of taking it from that perspective as well. This episode I got to watch four times actually, this coming one. So definitely three times.
Coming one, not Terra Firma Part 2.
Terra Firma Part 2, I think I watched three times. So, yeah. But Sukal, I watched four times. So, anyway, enough about that. Stale licorice.
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. I was like, oh, yeah, it did snap for show.
I guess it depends whether it's Twizzlers or... what's the other brand?
Red Vines.
Red Vines, yeah. Because I think, don't Red Vines snap a little more?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. In Canada, I don't think I ever had a Red Vines. They definitely had Twizzlers, but I don't remember ever seeing Red Vines. So I'm used to Twizzlers. Now, I know Twizzlers, yes, when they get stale, they get snappy. So
those looked like Twizzlers, not Red Vines anyway.
Yeah. I wonder if there was some product placement. Obviously not. And just worth saying that I would have liked to have seen a Mirror Reno.
Mm-hmm.
Other people said that, but in you mentioning the licorice, I thought of it again. So anyway, you have anything you want to add about Trace? Voicemail.
No.
Number one.
I'm just glad that we got your voicemail on time this time.
Yeah.
That was weird. It was very weird. I was like, I swear this was not here when we recorded, but it says that it was.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, and Trey sent it a few different ways this time. So
right. Just to make sure. Yeah. That's a good. Yeah. That's good. Because, you know, you never know.
Yeah. What a lot of people do, or at least... a few people do, like Fred, when he sends in his feedback, he always sends me a message in Facebook Messenger. Did you get it? And it's like, yeah, I got it. Which is good, though, because that way we at least know it's there. So
yeah, we know to look for it.
Yep. Okay, so our next bit of feedback is from Clint from Indianapolis. Ruthie, you want to take this one?
All right. Clint says, a little behind this weekend, but I give this episode a 9.75 Guardians out of 10. Did anyone else get the inner light flash when Michael said Giorgio was out for just a minute instead of the months Giorgio experienced?
A little bit.
You know,
yeah.
I should have, but what I was thinking, and probably only because of the... recording aspect of it, but what I was thinking of was the movie Contact, where she recorded for hours and hours and hours, but she apparently just dropped straight through. So that's what it reminded me of, honestly. But yes, I totally get what you're saying, and I should have gotten that, but I didn't. But you're right. It's exactly like that. Giorgio will either end up in her universe in the future of her original timeline or back to the Pike TOS era of Star Trek. Could she be placed in the Mirror Universe, but after the last known crossover of someone from the Mirror Universe to the Prime Universe? Maybe.
I doubt it. I think that she would be sent where she wanted to go, and it was pretty clear she didn't want to go back to the Mirror Universe, so I think it's going to be Pike era.
I do, too. That's what I'm thinking, is that it's going to be in that time. Mm-hmm. Because she can't go too much astray, because it wouldn't solve her problem.
Right.
So there would be no point.
Mm-hmm. Next is LT from NC, and he is reacting to the podcast, and he says, "My one comment last week was obviously too meta for my own good, since I hoped you'd pick up on what I meant. The set comment was an addition to what you mentioned about why everything was on Discovery with no Charon or Shenzhou or anywhere else. And LT, what I think you were referring to is your comment, did the Guardian have a small budget for sets?" And I think we're basically in agreement there, but I think what you meant was the episode. Like, if you had said Terra Firma, then we would have picked up on it, but you said the Guardian. But I thought the Guardian effects were okay. Specifically, I shouldn't say okay, they were good.
They spent all their money on the Guardian.
And I think they spent a lot of money looking at this episode. I think they spent a lot of money on this episode. I think they kind of like saw, ooh, episode 11 is going to have a lot of effects in it, so we need to save up. So like everything from episode 7, they said, oh, we can't go to Vulcan. We have to have it on in the mess hall. So or whatever, Navarre. So the last several episodes, 8, 9, and 10, they scaled back the budget a little bit. And this episode, it seems like they really went out and spent a lot. So, because I imagine those scenes in, you know, the Holo program were quite expensive and had a ton of visual effects in them.
They didn't have a ton of visual effects in them.
Well, like the scene where the Saru and Cobra were walking, that looked like it was pretty effects laden.
They said most of it was practical, though, on the ready room.
They did, yes. Well, I did see some.
I mean, practical shots sets can still be expensive.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I just don't think it was all visual effects because they said most of it was practical.
Right. And we also got some feedback on last week's podcast from Fred. We're going to play his voicemail in its entirety rather than try to extract it out. I didn't want to have to bother to do that today. So we'll just play that with his supersized feedback. So, all right. So let's move on to this week's episode, season 3, episode 11, titled Sukal. And it's worth saying that when they originally released the episode titles, it was originally titled The Citadel. In fact, when Ruthie and I recorded last Saturday, I said The Citadel, and I pulled it out of the episode, and I re-recorded that and said Sukal. So just make sure that we had the right information out there. This episode was written by Anne Coffell Saunders and directed by Norma Bailey. The description from CBS.com is as follows. Discovery ventures to the Vruban Nebula, where Burnham, Saru, and Culber make a shocking realization about the origin of the burn as the rest of the crew faces an unexpected threat. And that was TVPG with language. We don't know the star date. And as Ruthie and I talked about before we started, I'm going to skip the whole stupid Pacific time thing and just keep it to Eastern time. It was released December 24th, Christmas Eve. When I accessed it, it was at 2:11 a.m. So it was probably available a few minutes before that. But And the runtime of it is 55 minutes, 16 seconds. This will be an interesting episode to discuss because a lot of times our thoughts and ratings kind of are pretty much in line. They are not in line at all this week.
Nope.
So, all right. Tell the people what you thought of it.
I didn't like it. And I can't give a number rating. So this is going to be an interactive rating, listeners. So imagine the worst rating you could give an episode and subtract two. If you're gasping right now, that's how much I was disappointed and didn't like it. And that's out of 10, eyes rolling so hard, they almost stuck that way in my head.
And I loved it. And I want to hear where this comes from, because I don't know. I have very little complaints about this. The only reason why I would give it a 9.6 is because of I had quite a few hold your horses. So
Probably all of your hold your horses were no's for me then.
Probably.
Because I was like, nope. I had a couple of yeses. But I'll be honest, I didn't even take notes the second time I watched it because I didn't want to just write down all the negative things because that's how I felt. So I didn't take notes. So I'm just going to, when you guys talk about things, if I'm silent, it's because I didn't like it.
Oh my God. A lot of times, some of our most interactive episodes are when our notes are few and far between, you know.
Yeah.
We just kind of come off as we go, you know. A lot of times I don't write any notes. I just kind of wing it. But I do have notes this week.
Well, I have notes for things if I want to remember to talk about something, but I don't really enjoy being super negative about stuff. I didn't necessarily want to write it down. Oh man.
Yeah. And especially relive it. So,
yeah, because I watched it a second time and it still turned out the way it did the first time. So I was disappointed all over again. Oh, man.
All right. Well, anyway, I'm going to give this a 9.6 burrs, dents, and shiny spots. Or maybe I'll give it 9.6 anticipated inputs. So,
right.
We have ratings from our listeners. Ruthie, why don't you start it off?
All right. Will from SoCal says, great episode. I rate this one a 9 out of 10. Sometimes it is hard for me to be objective because I love this show and all the great characters, especially Michael. I have a feeling I'm on my own here.
No, I think there's at least one person that seems to be in agreement with you. Okay. Jeff X-Force11 gives it 9 human sarus.
All right, Edwin from Arizona gives it a 9.5.
Comic Geek Kev says, I give this episode 9.9 out of 10. Hey, that's Doug Jones' real faces. Just those few little nitpicks that he mentions later, but it's as close to a perfect episode as I've seen.
Wow. Wes from Minnesota says, this episode has finally gotten back on that roller coaster and is setting up for one grand finale. I give Sukal 9.75 human sarus out of 10.
And LT from NC, I think he's leaning towards your thoughts on this. He gave it a 7 out of 10. Holy MC Escher. So now, mind you, it's not worst episode minus 2.
I was going to say, I'm not quite sure he really disliked it as much as I did.
But at least it was, you know, more negative than everybody else. So,
yay. Thanks, LT. Oh, my gosh.
You are not alone.
You know, we'll see.
I imagine that, you know, if I can get this episode out at a decent day and time this week, and believe me, listeners, I feel for you. I know the last few weeks have been, it sucked that it's taken me so long to get it out. But hopefully I'll get this one out earlier this time around and we'll hear from some people that agreed with Ruthie. I'm almost certain of it. Okay, so anyway, let's move on to the yeses.
Yes!
Will from SoCal says yes to the visual effects and close-up of the ship Discovery as it approached the Vrubin Nebula. That's cool. Yeah, the visual effects in this episode were amazing. I mean, I don't know if it's the best we've ever seen from Discovery, but everything that we saw was really, really good. So, and yes to Saru appearing human and attempting to save another Kelpian. I love seeing the emotions on Saru's face when we see the elder Kelpian. Yes, I agree with that. And I have that in my yeses, actually, the scenes with the elder, who was played by Robert Verlacky, who was the same actor who played Saru's father in the short trek, The Brightest Star. And Doug Jones mentions this in the Ready Room episode, but I actually picked up on it when I watched it. I could tell it was him from the voice. And he was actually the Vulcan principal that was in Children of Mars. Children of Mars, the last short trek before Picard started.
Yes.
So anyway, I thought that those scenes were really good. And I thought the expression, you know, we actually get to see Doug Jones emote without having all that prosthesis on his face, and that I really appreciated that. And it's funny that even with that, though, he still had to have makeup and because he shaves his head during the season because of all that makeup. So
prosthesis.
So he had to have a wig on. So but
I mean, all actors wear makeup. They just, right. It's a matter of how much. This right. time he was wearing a wig.
Yeah.
I agree with this. I always enjoy it when I get to see characters out of their normal, setting or whatever. Like, one of my very favorite episodes of Deep Space Nine ever is, I believe it's called Far Beyond the Stars, where they are basically science fiction writers set in like 1950s Earth.
Yep.
I love that episode. And I think this is probably an example of a bad surprise for me, because I was sort of expecting that caliber of an episode, I guess, maybe. Probably should not have been, so it's my own fault that I was disappointed, I suppose, but I didn't get that, and so I was kind of maybe looking forward to that because I enjoy seeing them not in their getup, I guess, not in their normal attire, what have you. So I don't know, but that was a yes for me as well. All right, Wes from Minnesota says, it was her real first test of being a captain in the Prime universe, but Tilly did the best she could in a bad situation when Osira paid a visit and took over Discovery.
Yeah, I had this in my yeses as well. I thought that she aptly performed the role. I do kind of wonder about them getting boarded and how that was able to happen so quickly.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, I guess that's kind of a no for me, but I also think that might be explained more next week.
Mm.
But I thought that Tilly did well in the role, but at the same time, should have never been in the role and shouldn't be. But we've talked about that anyway. So.
All right. He goes on to say, I bet Doug Jones enjoyed doing this episode as he didn't need to wear his Kelpian makeup for most of this episode.
Yep.
He did say that in the Ready Room. They interviewed him and he did express his enjoyment for being able to do simple things without assistance. Because it's not just makeup. He's got like hands and feet, whole face, whole head. Nice use of Sigmund Freud, as he has been mentioned numerous times in Trek and even made an appearance in TNG in the episode Phantasms.
Yeah. I always remember that one.
Yeah. Osyra is now being more of a villain than when she first appeared 3 episodes ago. Wonderfully acted by Janet Kidder in this episode.
And LT from NC, feeding onto that, says, seeing Osyra as a serious big bad now, rather than the weak way it was shown before. And I had this in my yeses as well. I thought Osyra was a lot more menacing this episode than she was in the first episode that she appeared. And I don't know if it was just better writing or the actor got into the role more this time, but I thought she was a lot more effective this time. And I enjoyed her in the role, whereas last time I enjoyed parts of her performance and parts of her performance I really didn't like. And I noticed with her interview on the Ready Room, that accent of hers, where she's kind of like falling in and out of an English accent, she seems to do that for real. So I don't know what her background is. Maybe she's married to an English guy or something. But as far as I know, from what I've seen of her, like, she's not living in the UK or something like that. And she didn't study in the UK, but there is a bit of an English accent there, but also not. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It's weird.
See, I did not feel differently about her this episode. I thought it was still, I don't know. I guess when I think of a really big bad, I think of like the Borg. I mean, they're practically unstoppable. That's the only thing to me that should give the Federation pause, even a Federation that is reduced so far in the future, because they still have all that previous history to fall back on. I mean, for crying out loud. It didn't make sense to me that she is able to, I mean, I guess to me, it did not feel earned. I need more. And I wish that they had given us more, because then maybe I would be afraid of her the way that I should be. But
yeah,
you telling me I should be afraid of someone does not make me afraid of someone. Showing how they are unstoppable will. Like, the very first encounter with the Borg, I was like, holy crap. I mean, they've got personal body shields that phase, so eventually your phasers don't affect them at all. They're drones, so when one falls, they don't care. They don't freak out. They're automatons. They don't have feelings. They all think like the queen. I mean, that's a scary entity to deal with. But chick who comes from a former slave race, whose whole idea is, I'm going to be a bitch so that my race never has to deal with that again. I mean, come on. I just overrated. That's all I felt.
Yeah, I know where you're coming with that. And I have that listed in my nose. So
I just wish, I mean, and I was thinking this while I was rewatching the episode, it just didn't feel earned. And I wish they'd spent more time earning her big bad status rather than, I mean, she killed her nephew, big deal. So what? It's like, that just means that she individually is a ruthless person, ruthless, unfeeling, uncaring person. It doesn't mean that she's someone who other people should fear. Other people aren't her nephew. So why should they give a crap about her? And they just keep saying this whole season, the Orion Syndicate, the Orion Syndicate. But they've never really shown how she is this way, because they've spent too much time dilly-dallying and wasting on other things instead of actually showing dangerous encounters with her. I mean, this episode was the first one, but I still didn't understand how this happened. Like, it made no logical sense to me.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. The no logical sense. And we'll have to explore this more in the nose and hold your horses.
Plus, I will just say this. I'm glad that you guys think that Janet Kidder is doing a great job, but I feel like the prosthesis is limiting her, because she looks weird. Her face doesn't move right and she can't really emote. And I don't know if it's just because she's unaccustomed to dealing with the prosthesis, but I'm like, her face just looks weird.
I was surprised when you mentioned that. I noticed that you mentioned that in the Facebook group, because I hadn't watched all of the Ready Room at the time that I saw you say that. I have since watched it, and you know, it's like, and when you see a picture of her and we see her on the Ready Room, it's like, she doesn't look like that. So why does she look that way? I don't understand the prosthesis, because, you know, it's essentially my thought of how you make an Orion person is you take a, take a person and make their skin green.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking. I don't understand this whole, like, let's do a prosthesis instead of makeup. I mean, yeah, makeup can be a pain in the butt, but clearly it's useful.
The only thing I can think of is that maybe they can't get the look that, or there's something about like wearing that kind of green makeup that's not safe. You know, I don't know.
Well, and people have said that before, but surely with advances in makeup technology, that can't be the case anymore. I mean, all you need is a foundation with a green pigment in it instead of a beige pigment or a dark brown pigment.
Right.
Or whatever. I mean, honestly, I don't really know the science behind making makeup and pigments and all that kind of stuff, but I can't believe it's that dangerous, because women around the world all the time, every day, wear foundation on their face. They just right. only wear it on their face, not their neck and their ears and, you know, whatever. Like, I can understand maybe doing a prosthesis on your hands so you're not having to wear makeup on your hands or whatever, like some kind of thin green
right.
latex glove thing. I don't know. But
right.
just putting an entire prosthesis on your head so that you can't emote. I get it for a character like Saru. I don't get it for a character like Osira. And honestly, it detracts for me, because like, she doesn't, like, does she have any feelings? Maybe that's what's making her be such a terrible person, because she's really a psychopath who has no empathy. I don't know.
Right. And what's her nephew's name? Is it Terrell?
I can't remember. He was so unimportant.
Yeah. Well, so him and the Orion that we see in the first episode, I know some people had certain things to say about the look of the Orions versus the look of Orions that we had seen before and how they didn't look the same. And I guess that now seeing this prosthesis, that must be it. Right. So anyway, maybe in another episode of the Ready Room, they'll explain why they do this.
Maybe it just takes less time to put on than actual makeup, but
yeah, but she was again, in the,
I don't
see how that could be, because she was in the makeup chair for 4 hours.
I know. That's, you get an airbrush gun and just psh, 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 and psh. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We are not experts in the field.
Clearly.
So. Yeah.
Although I have put on makeup before, so I know it doesn't have to take that long.
Yes. Well,
especially if you use an airbrush machine, it would take like maybe an hour to do her face, neck, ears, all that stuff. I don't know.
All right. So this is the yeses. So let's get back to
my gosh.
LT's second yes is seeing Doug Jones without his appliances, ironically, how he still had the walk. Yes, he did still have the walk. And you may have noticed that Bill Irwin, who was playing Sukal, also had the walk. So that little swooping motion that he has with his hands when he's walking, Bill Irwin was doing that as well. Tilly showing she has the ability to be a tough commander. And we just talked about that a minute ago.
Comic Geek Kev says, the Burnham Tilly conversation about the burr was great. Yes, it was a pretty obvious setup to Tilly later needing just such a tactic, but tying it back to Georgia was great, and it totally worked for me. I agree. I enjoyed the moment between Michael and Tilly.
I did too.
Tilly in the big chair so soon, I think, was also kind of expected. We knew Osira was showing up again, but and then Saru leaves the ship. What else was going to happen? But honestly, who else was going to go better in such a case besides maybe Burnham? Mary Wiseman was once again fantastic. Osira was great as well. Really, all the performances were spectacular. The Alien Away Team. It was so great to see Saru as human, but even Burnham and Culber looked great. I thought that was a great story turn.
It was a great story turn. Very unexpected. And I do have a hold your horses on that, though.
Oh, that's funny, because I probably do, too. Oh, my goodness. Okay, the visual effects this week were unbelievable. Just absolutely fantastic. Burnham trying to pull Saru back to reality while the ship was being tossed about in the radiation shows that, despite her transgressions, she really is the best choice for number one. She didn't come out and say stop, but the tone was there. His judgment was compromised by the idea of a Kelpian and couldn't see past that, but Burnham could. Also shows that Saru needs some seasoning in position. But even Kirk started somewhere.
Very true. Kirk did start somewhere.
I agree, but usually you get that from being first officer and you don't have those same kinds of issues when you actually become captain because you've already presumably taken the chair with a safety net of I'm not actually captain. The captain's going to come along and fix whatever I screwed up, but I don't know.
Well, yes, and I think eventually we're going to have Burnham become number one again, and it all signs lead to that, and then maybe Tilly will become a lieutenant and, you know, move up the chain. But I think she still needs some seasoning, you know, and I don't see her retaining first officer unless she ends up like really, really doing something incredible in the next two episodes. I find it much more likely that Burnham will. So that's it for our listener yeses. Usually I say, Ruthie, what are your yeses? But I'm going to say, Ruthie, do you have any yeses this week?
I think that I expressed them already. It was great seeing Jet Reno for a millisecond.
Well, my yeses, the tentacles grabbing a hold of Discovery. I thought that this was, you know, I was expecting a tractor beam or something like that, but these are more like tentacles or, you know, serpent tails or something like that. I thought that was a really cool effect, very unexpected. So, effectively in Sukal, we got a 125-year-old child. And I think that's a little simple by saying that, but clearly we have a person who did not completely get to adapt to being an adult. So I thought that was an interesting kind of choice that they've made here. And I wonder how old Kelpians get, because he looked like he'd probably be middle-aged or something, especially compared to the holodeck Kelpian, which I mentioned earlier. I thought that the special effect of Burnham falling up and those walkways that Culber and Saru were, you know, walking through, and they, you know, they were forming as they go, was sort of similar to what we see like at Federation headquarters, but different. I thought that was really cool. So it reminds me of something I've seen before, and I can't remember what or where, but I have to think that I've seen that kind of effect before, but I thought it was still cool.
Like moldable matter?
No, what I mean is like a bridge kind of coming together piece by piece as it needs to be stepped upon. I've seen that in some TV or movie before, and I can't remember where. This is different than the programmable matter special effect that we're getting on.
I think I know what you're talking about. I probably have seen it too.
Yeah.
But I can't remember it either.
I can't remember it.
Can't place it.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool too, the falling up thing.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, that was cool. I mean, there were definitely aspects of this hollow world that were cool, but there were others that were not.
I thought that Burnham trying to adapt and like playing the hollow program was cool. I thought that, you know, she was kind of showing her xenobiology experience and, you know, background. So
I thought she was well suited to that, particularly because of her, I guess, childhood on Vulcan. So she, I think, was well suited to being able to play a computer program.
Right. Although I think she pushed it a little too far.
Yeah.
In the end. And contrast to this, Saru kind of screwed things up at the beginning, but was adapted much better in the end. So I think Saru staying behind made more sense. And, you know, maybe eventually things will change and he'll take his usual form or something. I don't know. But and Sukal will see him as Saru and not as a human Saru, which would make it easier for him.
I don't understand. Well, anyway.
Yeah, we'll get to that. I know what you're going to say. So, because I have the same thought. Saru, speaking of that, Saru singing the lullaby, I thought that was good to, and that kind of calmed him, calmed Sukal. And I could see them taking that forward next week. And the last thing, and this is just a goofy thing to say, when Sukal gets scared, he gets gas. He seems to have wicked dilithium exploding farts.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's how the burn happened. He let go a pretty wicked fart. So, anyway. I know, classless, but I went with it. Okay. So let's move on to our nose. No!
All right, Will from SoCal, his first no, or his no, is no to Tilly taking command while Saru was on away mission and losing the Discovery. The Admiral just stated that that the Discovery was a target and must be protected. Not fair to put Tilly in this position to face Osira. I have to agree with that because, I mean, this person that we've been told over and over again is the biggest threat to the Federation, but you're going to leave an ensign in charge. Okay. He has full confidence in her.
Mm-hmm.
That's not my biggest problem, though, with this particular interaction. I don't understand how they lost her in the first place.
Yep, I would agree.
I mean, she's off on Kaminar, and then suddenly she's, we don't know how far away, at the Varubin Nebula, and there's no Federation ship chasing after her. They can't project her course, and they can't, like, oh, crap, we know where she's headed, and show up and try and stop her from, I mean, if Discovery is the most wanted ship in the known universe, why aren't they doing anything else to protect it?
Yeah, you would think. You would think.
I'll tell you why. Because reasons. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a plot. That was not supposed to be a joke.
I know. It is not a joke, but I don't know what else to say there.
Or, wah, wah.
Oh, yes. I think in the end, it's that, and it's also...
Yep.
Wes from Minnesota is next. He says, I'm not sure what would qualify for a no for me this week. Maybe Gray reappearing and doing nothing to serve the story, maybe? I mean, I am glad to see Adira happy again, but Gray reappearing out of nowhere and doing nothing to serve the story other than making Adira happy, that's just a no for me.
100%.
I agree with you, Wes. I had this in my Hold Your Horses. I said, I have a lot of questions regarding Gray and his disappearance and reappearance, but specifically his appearance here really didn't offer anything to the plot or,
nope.
You know, it was just kind of like, hey, I'm here and I had to figure things out and,
I had to go and find myself, but I'm dead. So
yeah, I'm only here because I need to keep you company on the planet or something. You
know? I have no idea. I didn't like it at all. I also didn't really like Stamets turning to him and giving him a talking to. Come on. I mean, I just... Okay, so it's a real entity to Adira, but it's still a figment of her imagination.
Yep.
Just because something is a figment of your imagination doesn't make it not real. It just means it doesn't exist for any other person. So Stamets turning to him and giving him, I would give you a piece of my mind if we weren't at this wake. Well, technically, anyway, I just.
Yeah, it was nope. Like both of them were talking to a figment of Adira's imagination. Adira was talking and I don't know. I need more.
I'm not opposed to it. Specifically, but I feel like they're not doing it right. Honestly, yeah. I'm like, all it does is make me want to roll my eyeballs.
I would agree with that. I think that they're not doing it right, or it just needs to be explained better than they have done. So I need more. And that's where I was coming. I don't understand why he disappeared, why he's reappearing suddenly. What's the point of him? This is not anything we've ever seen before with Trill, so I don't get it.
Yeah. And I can understand if they explain it that maybe it's because she's human. And so therefore it's a different joining experience, but I'm still not 100% okay with the whole way that they've explained a Trill joining with a human, like just because the Trill wants to. I mean, the Trill clearly wanted to in Star Trek The Next Generation episode when he had to join with Riker.
Right.
But that didn't work out so well. It doesn't make any logical sense to me. And so they've added this completely foreign other element I have a feeling that my negativity towards this episode is really more of a culmination of my disappointment for this whole season, because I feel like they're throwing all this stuff at us and just telling us that that's the way it is and not really giving us any explanation. And we're supposed to just go with it because it's 930 years in the future. So how would we really know? I'm like, well, I know because I understand how evolution works. Things don't usually go backwards. I feel like, don't tell me all this stuff. I need you to show me. I keep saying, I need more. Well, we've got two episodes left. When am I going to get it?
Yeah.
So I'm irritated about that. And it's probably, I'm taking it out on this episode, but I don't really care, quite frankly.
So I get where you're coming from. So I do. That's one thing, you know, you expressed this to me Thursday, and I was like, I don't know where you're coming from, because I really enjoyed this one. But I figured as time went on, as we started talking about it, I understand where the basis of it was coming from. So I shouldn't say I'm starting to. I have figured out at least a lot of it. So next he says, also, I am not sure if I accept that this Kelpian caused the burn.
Mm-hmm.
He had wicked farts. I just told you that.
No, he didn't have wicked farts. What he had was a temper tantrum.
Yeah, I don't know if that's what it was, though.
Exactly a temper tantrum. Trust me. I've been watching my 2-year-old little brother have them recently.
Well, this will be explained in the next person's no. So anyway, he says, I guess I was expecting something more sinister than what was seen. Maybe, perhaps, we haven't gotten the full story.
Mm.
I don't know. I think we have gotten the full story. It's just, it's a lot.
Well,
I mean, I'm trying to make make it into a joke that, you know, his wicked farts are the source of the bird. But I mean, or a temper tantrum or whatever, but I don't know. It's just, there's something not good about it. Yeah. So next.
Yeah. LT and I are on the same page here. He says, just not buying that a Kelpian in a nebula having a tantrum caused the burn. They had a lot more story filler and running around rather than giving me some more facts, technobabble or not, to make me buy that plot point. I agree with you 100%, LT. First of all, first and foremost, because there was only one burn. Anyone who's ever been around someone who is growing up knows that a child does not have just one temper tantrum, okay?
Right.
And so now I feel like there are so many issues with this. Okay, so were they aware that the child's temper tantrum caused this? And so therefore this entire environment was created so that the child would not have any more temper tantrums, thus not ever growing up fully? Because that kind of makes sense, but you're right. No. They wouldn't have any idea that this child's temper tantrum caused the burn because they're stuck in this nebula with no communication. No one has found them for 125 years. Apparently, no one even knew they were missing. They probably just assumed that they exploded in the burn, but presumably they went missing before the burn. So you would think they would realize that this ship was missing, but maybe because they couldn't find it beforehand and then they couldn't find it after. Maybe they just assumed that it blew up in the burn. Fine. I get that. But I just don't understand why there weren't multiple issues. I mean, at this point in time, if this is the theory that they're going with, that this child's temper tantrum caused the burn, there should be no ships using dilithium left ever at all, period.
Yeah, because you would expect that all dilithium supplies would have blown up.
Multiple times. Yeah. And so ships would have quit using them. Hey, it happened not once, not twice. You know, I mean, how many times does this kind of thing have to happen before people are like, maybe we shouldn't. But no, it just happened one time. Because clearly the writers have never had a child or been around small children.
Well, my theory on this, and, you know, perhaps this will be explained next week and perhaps it won't. But my theory from a story perspective is that the child was 5 years old, you know, based on what we've heard when the burn happened. So he was roughly 5 years old when he had a tantrum. I imagine that he had a tantrum when his mother, who is probably the last surviving Kelpian on the ship, died. So we'll probably find out that his mother died, you know, when he was five, and he had a tantrum, and that tantrum was so large, so massive that it caused the burn. What he did in this episode was, like, you know, just a mini tantrum, something that would, you know, just be a little thing. Now, that doesn't explain or condone this story element. I think that it is fraught with problem.
Yeah, so, because so that no one ever noticed any tremors like that previously. I mean, clearly, if this one wasn't as bad, so it didn't actually cause the burn, anytime the child gets upset, this kind of thing would happen. But it hasn't. Mm-hmm. So one singular thing happened that caused the burn, and that was his mother dying. And in this episode, you're saying he was nearly that upset enough to make it nearly happen again? Because of what?
The monster?
Yeah, that... Nope, not buying it. Sorry. Doesn't work for me. Well, I just can't get behind it. I just really want to be like, what the hell are you people thinking? And why did you ever think that this would be a good idea?
It's certainly not the greatest idea.
It's ridiculous.
I'm
so disappointed. Oh,
I think that this show needs to take, and for that matter, Picard, needs to take a couple of pages out of Berman Trek and get a little more technobabbly. Because, yes, sometimes it got a little ridiculous with, you know, oh, the Tetrion particles and, you know, this particle and this molecule and, you know, whatever. But sometimes that kind of thing helps. And there isn't a lot of that in these two shows. There's just
there's like, practically none.
Right. I don't know.
Makes me wonder, are we in Star Trek? Because they've got no scientific explanations for anything that happens.
Yeah.
So it really doesn't, it's really starting to not feel like Star Trek at all. I'm like, this is, I just, just doesn't, it doesn't work for me.
I get worried when you say stuff like that.
Well,
I don't want this to turn into.
I keep hoping that they do better, but I keep getting disappointed.
Yes. Anyway, that's the thought there.
I don't know what to say. I feel like they should have done something besides a child's temper tantrum.
Mm-hmm. And our last set of listener notes is from Comic Geek Kev. He says, honestly, I don't have any outright no issues with this episode. I'm sure there are some. Well, you just heard some. And I'm probably too easy on the show because I love it so much. And then he says, maybe that Discovery was taken over. But since that's just a story and actually pretty great dramatically, it doesn't really count. LOL. Okay, well, that's a false no. But you know, you could make a no out of that.
I could definitely make a no out of that. Yeah. I don't understand how Discovery got taken over. Did they not have their shields up? Do they have to drop their shields when they go into Black Alert? Did they ever say that before and we just didn't hear it?
Well, it may have something to do with cloaking, you know, because in the past, you couldn't have shields up and have your cloak up at the same time.
Right.
So
but
maybe
they dropped their cloak significantly prior to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think so, that the first thing you do when your cloak drops is to raise your shields. I mean, what have they been working on for the past, I don't know. And Tilly even said, tell Stamets we need the shields in 10 minutes because he said it would take 30. Which brings me to another point. I thought that Reno was the chief engineer, but Stamets is the one in charge of getting the shields back up.
I am glad that you brought this up because I did not put this in my notes and I meant to. Yeah. Stamets.
Turns out I don't
Reno need was the chief engineer, yet he's giving direction to Reno, who outranks him, and for that matter, Stamets is a silver, which puts him in sciences, not engineering. Mm. And this is further complicated by the thing that we saw in season 1, episode 5, where his life signs came up and it said chief engineer. And then the writer said, oh, no, he's not supposed to be chief engineer. But it already showed that he was chief engineer. So,
yeah,
you know, we're in this like weird thing. But
it's the same way that we're not sure if Culber is chief medical officer. Like, I feel like they were trying to do Lower Decks in Discovery because they haven't outright said that anybody is chief engineer, chief medical officer or anything like that. But they're really, really acting like they are.
Yes.
So I'm like, you're very confusing. Your mixed messages and signal crossings are not working for me very well. And I mean, Reno can't be chief engineer because she's not there enough.
Well, okay. She should be chief engineer, though.
She should be. But unfortunately, until Jet Reno agrees to do more of the show, I don't think that she can be.
It was weird that
it was totally Stamets weird.
It didn't make a lot of sense to me, especially with him getting the shields up. You think that would be Reno's job, not and her not in a secondary role. in that. So All right. Well, we already started in your nose. So what do you have? Probably it'll take an hour.
You go and I'll agree with you.
Okay. All right. Well, this whole Emerald Chain thing, the only real thing that we've seen as far as the Emerald Chain is Osyra. And, you know, we did see in the first episode that whole, you know, mercantile exchange or whatever they called it, trading post. And then the, you know, that junkyard planet, whatever you want to call it, salvage planet. But that's all an extension of Osyra. And it sounds like the Emerald Chain is basically just a group of pirates that have kind of, you know, gathered together. Mm-hmm. And it seems like Osyra is the, you know,
chief
big pirate in this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, I don't understand this. Like,
so why should we be afraid of her?
Yeah. If she's just like one ship, like how can she, it's like, I don't get it. It's just,
that's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. She's not scary. She and her one ship. I mean, surely at some point in time, the Federation advanced in their technology, but clearly they don't even have technology that matches up with the Emerald Chain, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. It's like they stopped advancing in technology.
And my take on it was that they kind of rescinded because of they were putting out fires, and you know that kind of thing happens. They were bleeding, you know, all these worlds were leaving, and you know, so they were putting out fires trying to, you know, stop the bleeding and not working on dealing with the other problems, like, you know, getting subspace back or that kind of thing, or finding a good substitute for dilithium. I mean, there had to be something, you know, build some transwarp conduits or something. Like, these are things that they had examples of. The Borg had them, you know, so.
And I would think in 930 years that they would have made some type of, I don't buy this whole dilithium is the only way to travel now. And conveniently, the spore drive shows up and it's a miracle, you know, manna from heaven. And you mean to tell me that they had been working on alternate means of transportation and they came up with zilch in 930 years?
Yeah.
So in other words, they plateaued in their technology in the 23rd century.
Or 24th.
Whatever. And there have been zero technological advancements since then. So there's nothing else to learn. We know everything in the universe now. But clearly not, because the Borg had transwarp technology, as you just stated.
Right.
So they could have worked on finding out how to stabilize that. Because they just said, right, I can't believe she would use the transwarp technology or the transwarp conduit because they're so unstable or some whatever.
Right.
BS.
And we know about quantum slipstreams.
Exactly.
You know,
I mean, yeah, they were already working on more technological ways to travel through space other than warp drive in the Next Generation.
Right.
And so nothing has happened with that in the 700 whatever years since
that warp wave, that one episode where
the
ship is riding the warp wave.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't buy it. That's my whole issue with this season, I think, is because the Federation fell apart because they didn't have subspace communications and they didn't have any warp drive. And so they had no way to travel to the member worlds and all that kind of stuff. That aspect of it makes sense. The reason why it happened does not make sense to me. And I'm disappointed in their, like, oh, let's have a, you know, let's do this kind of a thing. I'm like, did none of you watch Star Trek aside from your own show? I mean, I have to ask because it doesn't make any sense that they would completely stop any kind of advancement. And the one advancement that the Vulcans and the Romulans were working on didn't work out very well. I'm like, the one advancement? Seriously? This is why I didn't take any notes.
You have plenty to say as it is.
I know. I'm just...
So...
And it just...
So I wrote a little note and it says, no logical sense. Now that I've said that, I don't know what it was applying to. It could apply to multiple things here. Mm-hmm. The temper tantrum, the whole Gray thing, putting Tilly under command. How did Osira get there?
Yeah.
I think that's what I was referring to.
Why was no one chasing her?
Right. Exactly. So I don't understand that part of it at all. Like they did say, she used a transwarp conduit and no one would be in the right mind to use a transwarp conduit. Well, why? What is it about the transwarp conduits that make it so, I mean, we saw what's his face? Rios use a transwarp conduit on the La Serena. La Serena. Thank you. That was just a speedy freighter, what is it about them?
This is exactly my point. This doesn't make any sense whatsoever. They have a Borg cube. Romulan people who joined with Vulcans finally had access to Borg technology. How hard would it be
reverse engineer.
Yes. How hard would it be to reverse engineer some Borg tech and put them in all of the ships so that everyone can use the transwarp conduits? Are they somehow unstable now or something? I mean,
they're certainly making it sound like they are, but I don't understand why they are.
But again, show me, don't tell me.
Right.
I mean, don't imply and then never give me a reason for why this is the case. All right, you say more words.
The other thing I wrote down as a no is Adira going over to Book's ship, and she doesn't have medicine. She had like a kit or something. Maybe she grabbed the kit from Book's ship, but then she doesn't take the kit over. She takes the medicine out, and she beams over before putting the medicine in her mouth. What the hell? Why would she do that, first of all? And are you telling me, I don't know, maybe I'm just sensitive to this because of COVID, but putting the medicine in her mouth, I just had a problem with that. Like, why? I don't get it.
Well, apparently pills are still a thing in the 32nd century.
But she didn't do that for her to take the dose herself. At least I didn't think so. Maybe she was taking the dose herself.
She was taking the dose herself.
Okay. So maybe I misread that whole scene. It seemed like
he said she took my medicine. She took my radiation, whatever thing.
Okay.
I read it as she took the pills. However, this brings me to another issue. Why did it take so long for Book's ship to clear the Discovery? I mean, he beamed right there.
Yeah.
It shouldn't have taken so long. Let me know the second. I just, everything fell apart. Let me know the second Book is left. I'm like, how did Osira know exactly where to send her people? How did they beam directly into the spore, whatchamacallit, tank thingy? How did they beam there in the first place?
Like I said, the only thing I can think of is that... The ship had to, the cloak was off at that point. So the cloak
was off, but the shields should have been up.
They should have been up. And we know that the the spore drive can operate with the shields up. So the shields would have been down. Maybe that device that Book installed had like a backdoor or something. I don't know. And that was, it made it able for her to access their systems or something. I mean, I don't know. Because it was mentioned that it was broadcasting the proper codes. Maybe they had the transponder codes. I don't know. Just a thought. Because
color me unimpressed.
Oh, yeah. I'm with you. I
still did not. I mean, how did she have the tech specs of the ship? Because they beamed in directly next to him in the spore drive thingy.
Yeah.
How did they know where that was?
And who were those guys, by the way? The people that beamed into the spore drive and put that collar, which I don't know what the heck that was, on Stamets. They had these masks on and made me think, are they like 32nd century Breen or something? I don't know. So is there any other no now that we've talked about that you want to bring up?
I just didn't like the whole taking over the ship so easily thing.
Yes. I agree with you.
I mean, do they not have any kind of safeguards against this happening? Why would they bother leaving their house?
Yeah, maybe Discovery didn't get all the retrofitting that they should have. I don't know.
That's completely ridiculous.
Well, of course it is. That's why I said it.
Well, I don't know. I just... We should probably just move on.
All right. So that's it for our no's. So let's move on to Hold Your Horses.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the heck? Hell. What the hell? Hold your horses.
Will from SoCal says, hold my horses. Admiral Vance allowed Saru to put Chili. I'm going to leave that in because it's funny. To put Tilly in charge when he hesitated for a reason. There should have been a more experienced officer in that chair. Well, I mean, we've been saying that all along. It is dubious to put an ensign in... commanding a starship. It's just, I don't care how good she is. It's just not, it makes no sense at all. So,
nope.
Especially with like someone like Burnham also being on the planet. So like your most experienced officer besides the captain is also not available. So it reminded me, and I didn't write this down in my notes, but the away team reminded me of TOS because they had the first officer. They had basically
the captain.
Yeah. They had the captain, the science officer, and the doctor. And the only difference was that Burnham wasn't first officer, but she was before. And effectively she will be again, I think, but it's crazy that they would do that.
So crazy.
I understand why Saru went down because of the whole Kelpian thing, but still, that is not right. It's not right at all.
I have more issues, but anyway, about other things. So, But yeah, how is Osira tracking the Discovery?
Then he says, how the fudge is Osira tracking Discovery's movement and aware of the ship's inner working system, especially the spore drive? Well,
that's a good question. Talked about this. Will, how exactly did she do that? Oh my gosh. I mean, they clearly stated that Discovery was on a need to know basis, yet somehow she magically knows. It's amazing.
Yep.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. In fact, it looks like all of these hold your horses, or most of them at least, seems to fit a similar vibe. So next one.
All right. Next, we have Wes from Minnesota, who says, Tilly being in command. The nervousness of her seemed to be too brief for me. However, since she did masquerade as Captain Tilly way back in season one, she may feel better being in that chair, but the nervousness was too brief. I agree.
I didn't really have a problem with the nervousness being too brief, but I did have a problem with the nervousness being too brief.
I had a problem with the nervousness generally speaking, I guess. I mean,
yeah,
fake it till you make it. I don't know. This is exactly really... why she shouldn't be in the captain's chair, because you should be accustomed to, I don't know, being in command or whatever.
Well, yeah. And like, this goes into the next thing, again, where LT from NC says, so how did the Viridian find Discovery in the nebula? Yes, indeed.
That's a good question, LT. They seem to jump right to where they were.
Yep. Then he says, once again, I'm getting that bad feeling about this feeling in where the story is going and how much time we have left to set up the end of the series. Well, it's not the series so much, it's the season. But
unless you're in the UK, in UK, which case it's yes. a series.
Right. What do they call a show in, like, what do they call, what's
instead
the equivalent
of a series? Of a, I have yeah. no idea.
Program?
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. All I know is that they say series one, season. Series two, yeah. blah, blah, blah. But I yes. have yet to figure out what the word for, what the equivalent word for series is for us.
Hmm.
That whole football soccer thing.
Well, basically, LT, we have two episodes to wrap up the season. And
I have a feeling it's going to be hand wave.
It seems like it will be. I have a feeling that, you know, like this episode was 55 minutes. I didn't go back and look to see how that compares to the rest of the episodes. I know that it's certainly...
they've been pretty long so far.
Most of them have been in the 40s, though. So
some of them have been pretty darn long, though.
Well, certainly second season, they had some really long ones. But this one... so our rough calculations put this episode as the third longest in the season so far. Now, whether or not the next two episodes are roughly in the same, you know, like 55, 56 minute range, or maybe even over an hour, I would tend to think so, but it's still a lot to get through to go, you know, to solve all the, settle all the plots of this season. And, you know, I don't know. I think it's possible, but I think some hand waving is probably going to be the case, you know, and that's unfortunate.
Yep, sure is. All right, next we have Comic Geek Kev, who says the horses aren't good enough. Early in the episode, did Saru call Reese Rice? It sounded like it. Maybe it was just
no,
me?
No, he didn't. And I thought the same thing. But I had done a rewatch, and it turns out when he said Rice, he actually said Bryce. He was looking at Bryce. He said what sounded like Rice, but the caption said Bryce, and he was looking at Bryce. So I think it was actually Bryce. Now, mind you, it did sound like Rice, so I don't know.
Maybe it sounded like Rice to you too, but I heard Bryce.
Yeah.
But anyway, so there you go.
Yeah.
Comic Geek Kev, he was saying Bryce. All right, nice to see Gray return, but the reasoning seems less than satisfactory and pretty manufactured. Like a way for Stamets to message that he and Culber are their family now and all they need. Maybe I read that wrong. Well, that sounds pretty much like what was going on. I don't know if Stamets necessarily thinks that, I mean, I don't know. I don't know that Stamets thinks that necessarily, but I didn't like the manufactured talking to thing.
It seems like they've kind of adopted Adira as, you know, part of their family. I mean, I don't think she lives with them or anything, but like a young sister or something or whatever. I don't know. But
adopted dads.
Yeah. But anyway. All right. Do you want to start with Hold Your Horses or should I?
You should.
Okay. So I'm going to read them out of order from what I have in the notes. I'm going to start with, why did they change their species? If, like, it was okay, it's great to have them be able to play a different species, I guess.
Right. Agreed.
Yeah. And especially Saru. But if Sukal is used to seeing humans and Kelpians, why change them? The only...
Why change the humans and Kelpians to other species?
Right.
That's an excellent question.
Yeah. That's, I don't understand that.
And this is how this completely differed from the Star Trek DS9 episode. There was a point. They were all human. They were all on Earth. So there was a point right. for having them be different. This,
yeah,
just, it was fun and we wanted to. Okay, yeah, I agree. It was fun, but I don't think you understand that a lot of your viewers are very logic-based, and I need logical explanations and reasons for things to happen in this show, other than just we wanted it to.
The only thing I could give for a reason that makes anything work for me is that the computer or the, you know, the holo program environment, whatever they want to call it, is malfunctioning. That's why it changed their species. But still, that's a stretch that goes a little too far to me. So next one I'm going to go with. Why is it no one identified Dr. Issa as being pregnant before now? I would think, Saru, that's a little detail that you might have wanted to mention since you found a life sign. I don't know. Maybe
I had a feeling that Saru knew that it wasn't radiation, but I didn't know what it was. But why did he keep that to himself?
That's what I don't understand.
That doesn't make any sense.
No. Like, I could see if he shared that with the medical staff, like Culber and Pollard, but keeping it to himself just didn't make any sense to me.
Did not make any sense to me either.
Why would there be a metal burr in the chair?
A metal burr that looked like a screw?
Yeah. It's just because she said it was some kind of flaw in the construction or something. And really, wouldn't they just like, I don't know. I find that flimsy. I find that just a little not believable.
Especially because the way that they made it looked like a screw for one thing. And yeah. If it were actually like a dip or a protrusion in, I mean, I just, this is a continuity error to me because
yeah, it is,
it looked like a screw and it should have been like a small protrusion.
Yeah.
And if it's a small protrusion, I can understand eventually it being rubbed down, but a screw, no, I can't.
And then again, like, why would it be there in the first place? Like, you're telling me that in the 2250s, they can't make a better chair. I could see a 2020 chair having that, but a 2256 chair, I don't think so. So
I don't know.
Little thing, but still, it was a nice little story. I like the story, but I just found it a little suspect.
A little convenient.
Okay, so I'm surprised no one mentioned Reno. Okay, she was there, great.
Gosh, if you blinked, she'd missed her.
Yeah, she was there. She was there about 5 seconds. So, like,
yep,
that was just not enough. And if they could do that, why can't they do that in a bunch of other
all the other episodes? Yeah, that's a exactly, good question.
You know, because she didn't really serve a purpose there. she should have been there, but she should have been there in several other episodes too. So, you know, that's my take on it.
Yeah. And I understand the actor's preference, but at the same time, it just, it's a disappointment.
Yeah.
It's like, do or don't half-ass.
Yeah. The last thing has to do about Adira, and I identified a no, which probably was wrong after Ruthie explained it to me, but this one isn't wrong. From what I understand, if you tap on the communicator or whatever, that triple trifunctional thing, if you tap on it twice, it's supposed to take you home.
Mm-hmm.
So Adira taps on it twice. It didn't take her home.
No.
It took her to where she was going, like to the planet.
Yep.
So that's a continuity error.
I also didn't like that. You remember how I pointed out that they, in the previous, Terraforma Part 1, Michael tapped on her badge and they both went?
Yes.
Why didn't that happen in this episode? They all three tapped their badges.
I noticed that too.
But I'm like, come on. I just want a little bit of continuity, I guess, is really the only word I could come up with. If you're going to introduce something in one episode, carry it through to the rest of the episodes. That's why they didn't all show up in the same spot, maybe. But that didn't make any sense to me. I'm like, I feel like they should all show up in the same spot. So they should have all synced their badges to the captain.
Right.
But whatever.
And I guess Book doesn't have a communicator or whatever, doesn't have one of those things.
Right.
I know he had one because he used it in the first episode, right?
He did have some kind of personal transporter.
Yeah, right.
But it had to recharge. I remember that.
Yes, it had to recharge. So.
But now Bryce is transporting him to wherever.
Yeah. So that I don't understand either. Like, he needs, I don't know, maybe it, that's blocked on the starship or something.
I don't know.
Doesn't make any sense. And I think that's it. So is there any other hold your horses that you would like to mention?
Yeah, I can't believe no one else said this. Why was the Holo program able to block things from their mind on their person? Like, the med kit that they needed for the radiation treatment was attached to their bodies. And for some reason, they couldn't feel or see them. How is the Holo program that advanced that it could do that?
Yeah.
That didn't make any sense to me whatsoever. Like, I should be able to... Okay, if the Holo program is masking their appearance, fine. But I should be able to touch my face and still feel my face the way my face feels. Or I should be able to touch my waist and still feel what I'm wearing on my person, regardless of what is seen.
Especially Saru, because you could argue that with Culber and with Burnham, their faces are largely, you know, their faces are human, and the difference between a Trill and a Bajoran and human, you know, the Bajoran have the nose and they have the earring on.
Right. But it's minimal.
Right. Right. That's what I'm saying. It's minimal. The Trill, I'm not sure if those spots have any
texture
to them, but also that's minimal. But
I mean, they look like freckles. Most of my freckles on my body don't have texture. They're just spots that you can't clean off.
Right. So, however, then you have to compare this to Saru. I hate to say it, but Saru's head is much bigger than a human head.
Yeah.
So, and maybe if he tried to touch his head, it would, I don't know. But that's my point, is that the holodeck may add things to a face, but I don't think it could subtract things from a face.
Right. I mean, it could mask and make it appear different.
Yes.
I guess, apparently. But I didn't understand that either. I'm like, what kind of advanced holo program are we dealing with here that it can get into your brain and screw with your brain?
Well, yeah. The heels.
Yeah.
Saru's heels were on the ground. How did that happen?
And he could feel it on the ground.
Yeah. How did that happen? Like, did it morph his physiology? I hope not.
There's that, no way.
Because that holo program was not exactly stable. It was it was malfunctioning all over the place. So if it morphed their bodies, they may never come back.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, so much of the holo program didn't make any sense to me. And I agree with LT. I think we need a little bit more technobabble, just because I need somebody to explain something to me about, I need reasons. I know I say show and not tell a lot, but I'm talking about show when something is scary, not show how, I mean, there's a time for explanation and there's a time for showing. The time for explanation is when you're introducing a new technology that does things radically different from what we're accustomed to. The time for showing is when showing how scary someone is.
I agree.
There's a reason why it's called show and tell. Sometimes you have to tell. Sometimes you have to show. And they're picking the wrong times for both.
I agree.
That's pretty much all I've got.
All right. So let's move on and go to open hailing frequencies and let's get to our listener feedback. Okay, so our first bit of feedback is from Jeff, X-Force 11.
Hello, Brian, Ruthie, and Star Trek fans. This is Jeff, X-Force 11, leaving my feedback about the most recent episode of Discovery. Wow, what an episode, and I was so ready to see what happens next. So personal and intense for so many characters, and I think we're seeing the naivety of Tilly being played here by a much crueler, ruthless captain, and things are not going well for our crew. I am just loving the storytelling this season and cannot wait to see what's next. All right, those are my thoughts. X-Force 11 is out.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff, X-Force 11. I do agree with the whole naivete idea. I think that she has, you know, a lot of knowledge there, but I don't know. I think it's not just the naivete of Tilly here, but also Saru for putting her in that position in the first place.
Yeah. This is another one of the reasons I think Saru is completely inexperienced as a captain and maybe shouldn't be captain, honestly.
Yeah.
I quite frankly don't know why the Admiral would have left him as captain. I mean, he was basically made captain by vote of the crew, sort of thing. Like, I mean, it just, I guess he was next in line or something. I mean, he was, he was Lorca's first officer. But
right,
did he stay first officer when
he did
Pike came on board? Okay, so
yes,
they made it seem like we're not sure who the first or who the captain is going to be. I'm like, and they also implied that they were going to pick up another captain when they were on their way to Vulcan and Pike stopped them. So it sort of feels like he's captain by default. And I don't really know that that is how Starfleet works. Like, if Admiral Vance read all their files, then he would have known that Saru maybe shouldn't have been captain. I don't know.
Certainly, I don't know. I don't know what to say on this one. I think that he should have been captain, but I think that both Saru and Burnham have a lot left to learn. I think Saru, I don't know.
Burnham maybe, was being more captain-like in this episode, personally.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Because she was like, I mean, he just, I feel like he just outright lied. Oh, I'm not emotionally compromised. Last episode, when Admiral Vance even, I mean, Admiral Vance even said, and I don't know what this is about, but Admiral Vance even said it would be understandable if you were, feeling a certain kind of way or whatever about this particular mission. Although I'm not exactly sure why he would, because he saw his sister right before they left. And I mean, he never expected to see any Kelpians again when he left in the first place. So why is this happening now, I guess, is my question.
Is a good point.
Because he...
Specifically, the point about him not expecting to see Kelpians again when he joined Starfleet.
Yeah. And so, I mean, he got to see his sister right before he left. And yay, everything is going great with you. So I don't understand why this is affecting him specifically so much.
Yep.
Much more than it would be affecting everyone else, I guess, because everyone else is also displaced in time and never expecting to see any of their loved ones again. So I don't know. I don't understand why they're making such a big deal about it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Maybe just the shock of Kelpians being in the Federation. It still doesn't make very much sense to me, though. So anyway.
All right, so let's move on and move on to our next voicemail. And Fred did what he has done in the past, where he sent in a first version of the voicemail. And then because our deadline's a little longer, he sent in the second version. And specifically, I mentioned it earlier, he reacted to something that was in our podcast, which, again, sorry, it didn't get out until Friday, Christmas Day, I might add. So, you know, yes, it took a while, but I was working on it Christmas Day, people, okay? So don't be too hard on me. And Christmas Eve, too, for that matter. But anyway, he reacts to something that we talked about in that episode, specific to something that he said. So here it is.
Hello, Brian and Ruthie, and all listeners to Talk True Media. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 3, Episode 11. Want to come back to a little misunderstanding of last week. I said I can imagine that the actors loving to play these dark mirror universe characters. But perhaps the pronunciation of this foreigner is not always as good as it should be. I said, well, I can imagine that the actors like it to get the worst out of yourself and play these roles, but I found it a bit too dark. And in a slower version that I didn't say can't, but can.
Well, I can imagine.
And you reacted with.
But anyway, to correct you, the actors love playing those dark versions of those characters.
And I thought, huh? But it doesn't matter. It's not that important. We obviously agree that the actors liked it and that I found it sometimes a little bit too dark. Okay, about episode 11. They did throw me off because this was not part one of a two-parter or perhaps even a three-parter, we don't know. So that was a little disturbing at the end that it obviously is a story to continue. Second nitpick is about a thing I thought of for a very long time. Why is this Sonequa Martin Green always whispering? I really get annoyed by it. Actually, my wife originally made a remark about it, and when we talked about how do you like Star Trek, etc., etc., and then she said, okay, I do like it, but I don't like this actress, Sonequa Martin Green, because her emotional scenes, or a little bit emotional scenes, are always in a whisper mode. And since my wife said that, I also see it. Actually, I felt it before, but I couldn't pinpoint it down. And if you see an interview with Sonequa, she is not like that at all. She is very enthusiastic and is not whispering at all. And is this just in her way of acting, or do the directors really want her to act like this? I think I really should watch something else from her than Star Trek to judge this better. Here is an example talking to Book.
And Saru worries you.
I'm not sure he can be objective. how he'll handle it if he has to make a hard call. Painful one, one that costs him. But that's what it means to be a captain.
He's gonna need you down there.
But whatever answers we find, I just hope they're enough.
And another one talking to Tilly.
Whenever Giorgio got into a tricky situation, she felt like all the different choices were mind-numbing. She would press on it with her thumb to kind of stay in the moment, you know? And the first time she made me acting captain, when I sat down, I immediately felt for it. But all that was there was this little shiny spot where she had rubbed that burr into a dent. And I've seen Saru touch the one here on Discovery. So, burr, dent, shiny spot, whatever. It's there for you. You belong in that chair, Tilly.
A nice surprise was, of course, Culber as Bajoran, Michael as Trill, and Saru as human. I think it was a very nice thing for Doug Jones to be without his prosthetics. And if you watch the Ready Room, you can see what he thought of that. And I think Tilly did quite a good job in being in command. Reminded me a bit of Killy, though. I found the story on the planet a little bit too surrealistic. Although I liked the model of M.C. Escher as a background, which is a Dutch artist, by the way. Okay, that was all for now. Time's up, although there were many other things to say. All the best for 2021 to all listeners of Talk True Media. Greetings, all the best, Fred from the Netherlands.
Well, thank you so much, Fred, for your voicemail. A little longer than the standard, you know, maximum 4 minutes, but considering essentially I could have broke this apart into two, but and just didn't want to bother today. The point about you said can and we thought you said can't. I mean, did you think he said can't at the time?
Yeah.
Or yeah. So it wasn't just me. I will say that we had some audio issues last week. So that might have been part of it. The soundboard was kind of low throughout the whole episode. So like particularly one other voicemail we had a really hard time with. Or maybe that was two episodes ago. Maybe
it was two ago.
Yeah, it was two ago now I think about it. We tried to adjust it and I don't think it was quite right, but I think it's better this week. So sorry about that. But yes, we agreed in the end. It seems like they've done this season with not naming episodes like part 1, 2, 3. But this isn't isolated to this show. Like I would say kind of Picard was this way, except for the last two episodes were part 1, part 2, but I would say in Deep Space Nine, like they could have put the last 10 episodes of Deep Space Nine in a part 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Cause they were all, you know, part of the same story. But they all had separate episode names and they had, you know, other times like, I can't remember, but there were a few other times. The three part that starts season two, those all had different episode titles. So anyway, it's not unheard of for them to give stories that are part 1, part 2, part 3, whatever, with different episode titles. Yeah, the whispering about that. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I don't. The book scene, they were in the hallway, so it kind of made sense for them to be whispering there. Tilly, to me, that scene, and I've seen this kind of with Burnham, she's not necessarily whispering. It just seems like she's talking softly
She's speaking low, I think, but she does whisper at the end. I think that was probably what he was referring to.
Maybe. Yeah. She did whisper at the end.
But I honestly, that's the least of my worries.
Very true. And we already talked about this, but I think it was nice for them to change the species, but it didn't necessarily make any sense.
Did not serve the story.
Yeah. It was just kind of like, we'll put them in a holodeck.
This will be fun to do.
Yeah. Let's give you a break. So the idea of Tilly being born for the chair, I think she'll make a great captain someday.
Someday.
Now is not the time. So it's not the time. It's just.
I didn't like it. Honestly, I didn't like the encounters between Osyra and Tilly. I didn't get what I wanted from her. To me, it wasn't very captain-like. It was more like a schoolyard bully was coming to pick on a girl who was pretty smart and was quipping back to her, but eventually got her butt kicked anyway.
That's pretty accurate. The last thing you mentioned, M.C. Escher, I had to look him up, and I actually asked you about it, Fred, because I wasn't really familiar with this artist's work.
Oh, really?
No,
I
hadn't been.
It looked exactly like his paintings.
Yeah. I mean, maybe I have, but I just didn't know the name. So,
if you recall ever seeing a painting that looked like that set, then yes, you have. If you don't, then you haven't.
Yeah.
Because
I kind of do.
Exactly. I mean, it was like, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. All right, cool. You have anything you want to add?
Nope. Just thanks for the voicemail, Fred.
Our last voicemail is from Trey from Pittsburgh.
And yay, Trey.
We got this one in this time, so here we go.
Hey, Brian. Hey, Ruthie. It's Trey from Pittsburgh calling about the most recent episode of Star Trek Discovery. I really enjoyed this episode. I thought that it was wonderful. The only thing I didn't care for was that it was a cliffhanger. I really do not like cliffhanger episodes where our protagonists are in a difficult situation or don't have the upper hand and I have to wait. I'm not sure I really understand how the Emerald Chain was able to jump on board so easily. I don't know if their shields dropped completely during Black Alert or she had that ability the entire time. I would hope that Tilly was able to have something in her back pocket, a lot like Picard or Janeway. I think that maybe the jump coordinates were not to Starfleet headquarters. Maybe it was a trap of some sort where Tilly had a contingency plan, you know, kind of proving that she did do a good job and not just lose the Discovery. The tentacle arm grabber things that came out of Osyra's ship were awesome. I really thought it was cool how they kind of went in between the saucer section and just kind of made it one with the ship. I didn't expect that to be able to happen. How did they go to Black Alert and the saucer section spin if the tentacles are through it? I don't know. Maybe a hold your horses there. They had those mind control devices that they could just put on Stamets to control him. Why wouldn't they just put that on everybody on the crew and force them into submission? Or if the Emerald Chain is so badass, why didn't they just shoot everybody on sight?
Yep.
And she fed her nephew to the transworm. I thought that finding out the source of the burn was a, you know, mutated Kelpian. I find it strange that it could be, you know, galactical damage from one person, but maybe, you know, a planet with a dilithium core would amplify it and then the radiation would spread and showing that it didn't all happen at one time, that it was an event that, you know, you see like the bubble of explosions extend to the furthest reaches of the galaxy and or universe. But I definitely don't think that Osyra's going to maintain the upper hand for the next episode. I hope that next week's episode, they're able to, you know, wrap up the Osyra having the upper hand. I really want to get back to the burn. I really feel that Tilly didn't just give up. I really think that Tilly has a backup plan and it was already enacted and ready and she had a contingency. My only concern would be that they did kind of get her and the bridge crew off guard after they had already seized the ship. So did she have enough time? But, you know, there can be a lot of stuff that happens off screen that we as the viewer aren't aware of. What I could see happening is a second burn that would occur, but the Federation would be aware that it was going to happen and deactivate their warp drive and just get rid of all the dilithium and give it to Osyra. And then a localized burn of some sort could happen to defeat the Emerald Chain. How come Saru said when they were on that cliff something along the lines of, you know, I didn't know humans' hearts palpitated and felt so much anxiety. Well, first of all, isn't he a Kelpian that for the majority of his life thought that there was, you know, always anxiety before they went through that change? The hologram itself in this simulation said your appearances have been altered. So there's not been a biological, you know, altering or biological morphing or any biological process whatsoever that wasn't cosmetic. Well, that's all I got, and I think I'm over my time limit. So Merry Christmas, guys.
Well, Trey, thank you for your voicemail.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you. Although we're recording this a day past Christmas.
That's okay. We can still say Merry Christmas.
Yes. lots of stuff that both of us were writing down.
Lots to unpack.
Yeah.
You bring up a lot of good points.
Good thoughts, I think, about Tilly putting in false coordinates. It wouldn't make a lot of sense for them to spore back in the Federation headquarters anyway. Like, if they wanted to just get out of there, they wouldn't have to go back to Federation headquarters. They could go anywhere. So,
yeah, I don't know why she would jump back to the Federation. I don't know why she would put those coordinates in there, being in the situation that they were in. I would have hoped that they would have locked them out somehow, that they would have been able to. I mean, in the past, people have locked out command codes. Just because it was usually Data who was doing it doesn't mean that no one else could.
Yeah.
So I don't understand. I was sort of hoping that that's what Detmer was doing.
I think she was.
But based on certain things, I'm not so sure. Certain things that are spoilery that I can't say.
Right.
Yet. But I don't know. I mean, I would think that that's what Tilly would have done. Because can't you do that from the captain's chair?
Yes.
So instead of smart mouthing and you're going to have to kill me to pull me out of the chair, she should have been, I don't know.
Good point.
Doing something, anything, rather than a snappy comeback that ended up, like, again, my whole problem with it was she made all these threats that she did not back up. And I don't feel like she had any intention of backing up because I don't think that she thought that she would have needed to. But that's what makes someone effectively scary. They threaten and they back it up.
Yes. Yeah. It's like you only get so far with promises, you know? It's like you have to back up what you say.
I'll blow up this ship before I give it to you.
Yeah.
Okay, do it then. I mean, I know it's a trope that's happened a lot, but that whole, like, set self-destruct and then stop it at the last second. I would have preferred that to this, honestly.
Yep.
Meh, meh, meh. Meh, meh, meh. Grumble, grumble. That's all I've got.
Ruthie is playing the curmudgeon this week.
I sure am. I'm grumble, grumble, grumble. I am the grumpy old man this episode. This episode, the part of the grumpy old man, will be played by me.
There's several things here. Shooting on sight.
Yep. If she's really so much of a badass, she should have executed them on the spot.
Unless she needed them to run the ship, which
Stamets is the only one she would have needed.
You would think so.
But once again,
I did notice in parts, like at least part of her crew, the Emerald Chain, there were some humans in there. Like there were various species, not just Andorians and
Orions.
There were other species. And of course, I mentioned the helmet guys, which who knows who they are. Mm. Reminded me of that guy that was wearing the helmet in episode 3. It turned out to be a human.
That's who I thought you were talking about. I was like, what?
No. If you look at the guys that put the thing on Stamets, that had restrained Stamets, they had helmets on.
I know who you're talking about in this episode. I don't know who you're talking about elsewhere.
The only other time was in episode 3, the People of Earth, where the guy that had kept raiding Earth was human, but he was wearing a helmet, and that was the one that Giorgio took off. So anyway, that's the only one I was thinking of.
Oh, I thought you were talking about from a different series. You said something about Deep Space Nine. Yes.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine, the
That's
Breen.
What I don't know you're talking about.
Okay. You don't remember the Breen?
No.
They were responsible for the first Defiant being lost. They had some new technology that took out the Defiant, if you recall.
I don't.
Okay. Yes, you bring out a point about galactic damage from one person. And that is why it seems kind of preposterous.
Mm.
Yes, you know, it could resonate in the nebula, resonate in the planet. For that matter, why does the planet still have dilithium if dilithium was destroyed everywhere else?
It's a good question.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of that until I said it. But but I guess, like, I recall, and this will show my age, I bet you LT will remember this. Back in the 70s, there was a Memorex commercial. I think it was Memorex, where they had Ella Fitzgerald singing a song, and she got to, like, a high note, and they played it on a cassette. And the test was, on this cassette, she could shatter a glass, and she did. So anyway, reminds me of that, hitting a high note and it shattering glass. So that's essentially what happened with dilithium, I guess, but it's still stupid. But the idea of giving all of dilithium to Osira and creating a second burn, I don't think this is a good idea.
The Emerald Chain and the Federation are not the only two entities in the universe that use dilithium.
Right.
It seems like something like that could/should happen. I'm just not sure that's it.
Yeah.
That seems like a dangerous solution. Like the cure might be worse than the disease.
Yeah.
But I like where your head is at.
Makes you wonder, though, with this happening basically caused by this boy, because he would have been a boy back then, and this thing that he does causes the burn, and it goes so fast that it, like, the difference between three ships getting hit by the burn is what, seven 1/1,000,000ths of a second?
Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So wow, that's pretty fast, assuming that they weren't close to each other.
Yeah, I mean, that's, for all general intents and purposes, simultaneous.
Warp 10, you know? I mean, warp 9.99999999.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see, what else did I write down? Human hearts and Kelpian anxiety. See, there's a point that we kind of talked about a little bit already. You know,
another aspect of the same issue that we're having.
Yeah, because he wouldn't have had any biological changes.
Unless somehow this holo program is advanced enough to get inside their head, which was my complaint. Sounds like it's kind of the same for you, because you're right. Saru did live with fear for most of his life, so he should be accustomed to the feeling.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And for that matter, why should he be feeling what a human heart like?
Yeah, it didn't make any sense. The whole, like, oh, I'm human now, so I must have human, like, human reactions, human physiological reactions, no less.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. It seems that, like, the program not just changed their appearance, but changed their physiology. And that can't be. I mean, that just can't be. So.
Yeah, it cannot be.
I can't change the laws of physics.
You cannot change the laws of physics.
Yep.
It's true. You can't. You canna.
You canna. Yeah. Any.
That's the Scottish version of cannot, FYI.
Yes. Canna. Yeah. Yeah. We heard that on Picard because we had a Scottish engineer on
Picard. You cannot change the laws of physics.
Yes.
Oh, Scotty. I did think it was funny. Tell Stamets to have it in 10. He said 30 minutes and the captain said quicker. Anyway, I thought that was kind of a funny, funny little throwback. Anyway, yeah.
Yep, it was. Yep. I don't have anything else for Trey's voicemail, but it was a great voicemail.
Yes,
thank you. Have anything else?
Nope. I'm just appreciative that we got your voicemail on time and we didn't have technological difficulties with the whole Ethernet. Not Ethernet, into the ether.
Internet. Yeah. Well, essentially Ethernet.
Yeah. The interwebs gave us problems.
Yeah. We got one more bit of feedback from Comic Geek Kev. This was an initial piece of feedback. He said, I'm not even done with this episode so far. It's been great. And then later, after he sent in his feedback, this was the one piece that didn't fit into the other things. So he said, first, I don't care what people want to call Discovery, old Trek, new Trek, no Trek. This was one of the best hours of sci-fi television I have ever seen. This show just continues to get better. Does it have a mild stinker here and there? Sure, every show does, but even its bad episodes are better than most shows. I would agree with that. And, you know, even criticism aside, and Ruthie may or may not agree, even when I have issues with this show, I still love it. And it's my favorite show. It may not be perfect. It may not hit a home run every time, but it's still my favorite show. And it's not just because I love the show. It's because I think it's so good sometimes. My 9.6 doesn't feel like a 9.6 anymore if I had to give the rating now, but it's still up there. So maybe a 9.2 or something. But anyway, do you have any other notes? I know you don't have notes, but do you have anything else you want to say about this episode?
I feel like I have harangued enough.
There's only two things that we haven't mentioned that I had written in the notes. I noticed that there was a brown-haired officer on the bridge, and it did not look like Nielsen. I couldn't figure out who that was.
I thought it was Nielsen with dark hair.
Yeah, and it may have been, and, you know, I can go back and look at the credits to see if she's credited there, but it didn't look like Nielsen to me. So,
I don't know who that was.
The last thing, and this, I went back and watched this like 5 or 6 times because it's basically the last shot of the episode. And it is, we see like Book's ship is coming out of the nebula and they're, you know, trying to get to Discovery. And instead, we see this ship, which I think is the Viridian, sporing away.
Mm-hmm.
So what the heck did we just see there? I mean, was it the Discovery and the Viridian kind of like locked together with those tentacles and it spored together? Or what was it we saw?
I sort of felt like it was the Viridian inside the spore drive pocket. I don't know if the spore drive creates a pocket, but that is pretty much all I've got.
Yeah.
Like somehow the Discovery was able to drag the Viridian along.
Like, I need to get another look at it, and maybe I'll change
four my... Four wasn't enough? You didn't get a good enough look after four times?
Well, it was dark, right? So that's part of the problem.
I'm teasing you the number of times that you watched the episode.
It wasn't the whole episode that I wanted to see.
I thought that you had only watched it one time this morning when you messaged me and told me that you were in the middle of your rewatch. I thought, well, I better give him time to rewatch again. I don't want to have the same thing happen that happened last time.
Nope.
Then you were like, I watched it three or four times. I was like, what the heck?
I said final. I didn't say second.
I know you didn't say second. I assumed second, which was my bad.
Yeah.
It was funny, though. I was like, what?
Yeah, I'm doing another look at it here. And it basically looks like Discovery is like wrapped around tentacles. And that's what we see. So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe they left the Viridian there and they all got on Discovery or something.
No, I don't think so.
I don't know. But it definitely didn't look like I switched the mode of my monitor so that I'd get a different color spectrum just now. And I could see a little better, but it still didn't give me what I was hoping. Anyway, that's actually it for my other notes. So
okie dokie.
Okay. So let's go to our shipwide announcements. And this week's Ready Room had interviews with Doug Jones and Janet Kidder. And I thought both of the interviews were interesting. And I think we both remarked about how different Janet Kidder looks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was actually startling how different she looks compared to how she looks in the show. And like her face is just doesn't look like the face of Osira. So I second what you've said about the prosthetics versus makeup. I have to agree. So I don't know. And of course, it was interesting to listen to Doug Jones talk about like he had to teach other Kelpians how to be a Kelpian and, you know, acting out of makeup, which was cool. And, you know, just all the things about Saru, because he's such an interesting character. Let's see. Moving on, of course, we get a clip of next week's episode. So if you don't know that, you probably should. But anyway, I think they actually offer that clip later on in the week that you can like watch separately. At least they do in the States on YouTube. So
that's not surprising.
Yeah. All right. So it's time for news. And thanks to Wes Huntington for collecting these for us. And this
week, Wes,
all of these are his. This episode had scenes filmed in an historical prison, Kingston Penitentiary in Kingston, Ontario, Canada.
Whoa.
Yes, opened in 1835. It was designated an historical landmark in 1990 and recently serviced prisoners as late as 2013. Now it is used as a filming location for Toronto-based productions such as Discovery and Murdoch Mysteries. Interesting. And Kingston is, I think, roughly halfway between Toronto and Montreal, so possibly other shows that are out of Montreal could use it too, I guess. John DeLancey said recently in a cameo video for a fan that you'll be seeing more of me in 2021, which has led to speculation that he will make another appearance as Q. And of course, he appeared on Lower Decks as Q. So interesting. I assume it could be that, but it could also be Picard for that matter.
Mm.
We'll see. Star Trek writer David Gerrold, who I think is most famous for writing the episode The Trouble with Tribbles, has lost the legal battle with Dr. Seuss Enterprises over the publication of Oh, the Places You'll Boldly Go, a parody of the classic Oh, the Places You'll Go. And if I understand it, and I think Ty Templeton was also involved with that, it was kind of a crossover between Star Trek and Dr. Seuss. And, you know, normally you'd think it would be Star Trek that would have sued over it, but it was actually Dr. Seuss and the estate of Dr. Seuss. So, or Dr. Seuss Enterprises, I guess. I don't know if it's the same kind of thing, but anyway, they sued for, intellectual, violation of copyright or whatever. And it had gone to a couple different cases or couple different
courts,
levels of courts. And it looks like it's pretty much settled that nope, it's not going to go forward. So it cannot be published.
It's too bad. If they had just gotten permission, maybe they would have been able to do it.
Yeah. I mean, the book exists. It just can't be published. So that's the sucky part. I mean, I don't know if they could like publish it with, zero cost or something, but I'm guessing they can't.
Do it at all. Somebody has intellectual property. You can't recreate it at all, even if it's not for profit.
Forbes magazine recently did an article on Discovery's Mary Wiseman. And in the article, Wiseman goes into depth about people body shaming her.
Huh.
And I know that this has gone on. We talked about this actually at one point, and I think it was one of the episodes that you weren't here for. But anyway, how...
makes sense that two guys would talk about...
Yeah, I mean, it came up. It came up from feedback from somebody else, and I kind of reacted strongly to it because, I don't think that's appropriate.
Mm.
That's not something that is a thing to do. It shouldn't have been a thing to do ever, but I don't know. It's just not right, just period. Anyway, also how the character is important to a lot of people and how fiercely loyal she is to the character. And I know that Kate Mulgrew actually shared a couple of tweets with Mary Wiseman, basically told her, don't listen to those people, because she got a lot of the same kind of things when she was the captain, of Voyager. There were a lot of people hated the idea of a woman captain, in a lot of ways, it doesn't seem that long ago. It's 25 years ago, but there were a lot of people that were resistant to it, but she was a great captain, no doubt. Anyway, some tech news here. Germany-based company Trinamix, and I don't know if that's how you say it, but that's my best guess.
Germans, let us know.
Is working with mobile tech company Qualcomm to investigate the possibility of putting spectrometers in mobile devices, similar to the Star Trek tricorder. Their first attempt will be to analyze your face to determine what skincare products you need.
Ooh, I don't know about that.
I don't know either. But eventually, they're hoping to analyze food for health and diet apps, and eventually whether plastics are recyclable. Those are uses that I did not expect. I would have thought some other use, but far for me to try to speculate. Viacom, CBS, and PPE manufacturer. I don't know what PPE stands for.
Personal protection equipment.
Oh, okay. Shield Buddies have teamed up to produce licensed face shields featuring logos from Discovery and Starfleet Medical. Hmm. Each shield costs $24.95. Interesting. I am curious about this. I don't know if it's available yet, but... And...
Yeah, I don't know if it's protection or protective.
Yeah.
But it's basically, anytime somebody says PPE, they're talking about like hazmat suits or like gloves and face masks and all that kind of stuff. That's generally referred to as PPE.
Yeah. Gates McFadden, who most of you, I'm sure, know as TNG's Dr. Beverly.
Dr. Crusher.
Crusher is launching a podcast.
Oh.
I don't know what it's about here, but it doesn't say. Tweets recently from her and Marina Sirtis show that production on this podcast was underway, and it may involve her TNG co-stars in some capacity. Interesting.
Fun.
Now, Marina Sirtis, based on that, I'm guessing that she's not also on the podcast, maybe just like appearing sometimes. Guessing. But yeah. Anyway, that's interesting. It says no news on a name or an air date yet, or for that matter, what it's about. So, like, I know the, what is it, Robert Duncan McNeil and Garrett Wong, they do that podcast called The Delta Flyers, which they're going through each episode of Star Trek Voyager. I haven't actually listened. I think I might have listened to a little bit of their first episode or something, but I'm subscribed to it, but I've been busy. So it hasn't been out that long. I think it maybe started earlier this year, probably during COVID. Lastly, Omaze has teamed up with George Takei to do something awesome in early 2021. One lucky fan will be able to watch your favorite Star Trek TOS episode with Takei himself. And I think I said it two different ways, Takei and Takei. But anyway, I think it's Takei.
I think it's Takei as well.
Yeah. During a virtual watch party, Takei will provide insights into the making of the episode the fan chooses. All proceeds from this Omaze campaign goes to States United to Prevent Gun Violence, a nonprofit organization dedicated to supporting state-based gun violence prevention groups and reducing the number of gun-related injuries and deaths in the United States. The contest runs from now until 11:59 p.m. Pacific time on December 31st. So, we usually talk ratings at this point, but there aren't any. Well, you can't really say that because there literally, it wasn't on this week. It being Christmas Eve, they did not put Discovery on CBS Thursday night, and it's not on next week either because it's New Year's Eve. The next time Discovery will be airing is January 7th, which is also the date of the finale of season 3. So
there you go.
Yeah. Lastly, Parrot Analytics. Discovery maintained its position of 9th place in the U.S. digital originals, but the total demand went up from 34.8 last week of the average title, 34.8 times the average title, to 36.4 times the average title. So overall, its place didn't change, but its week-to-week changed. Top, far and above, is The Mandalorian, which is 125.8 times the average title. So, and I still haven't seen The Mandalorian. So, season 2. Eventually. Second week of January. So, that's it for news. So, Ruthie, why don't you tell people how to contact us?
All righty. All right. To submit your theories and feedback, go to talkthroughmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit text or audio. You can call us at 216-232-6146. You can send us an email or attach an audio file to StarTrekDiscovery@talkthroughmedia.com. You can post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/group/StarTrekTTMPodcasts. And since next week is New Year's, we are going to record on Saturday morning again. So due to the New Year's holiday, the deadline for Discovery Season 3, Episode 12 for feedback will be extended to Saturday, January 2nd, 2021 at 6 a.m. Eastern, 5 Central, 1100 UTC. So next year, be the next podcast.
Connect with us. Our Twitter and Instagram is Star Trek TTM. Now, I want to mention Instagram. I've been catching up on episodes. I've been putting in pictures and links to our episodes on Instagram. And I have noticed a significant increase in followers over the past week or two since I started this. So I am going to continue to catch up. Which I'll do when I'm not editing. So, So please follow us there on Instagram if you're not already doing so. And I promise that I will keep it up to date. A great way you can support us is to share our posts on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. So, and our stories as well, because I also post stories on Instagram as well. So, and our Facebook page for the network is at facebook.com/talkthroughmedia. Now, there you can write a review, and we post our episodes there. And that way you can write us a review, but they are shareable, unlike the ones that go to the Facebook group, because the Facebook group is a private group. So you can't post them. So subscribe to us in Apple Podcasts or the podcast client of your choice. While you're there, give us a rating or review. On the blog post, there is a little link that will take you to a page that will have where you can write a review for Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, CastBox, and Podchaser. So it's all in one place. So another way you can help support us is through Patreon. And we would like to thank our Patreon supporters, Clint McCollum, Lawrence Todd, James Robbins, Fred Petrie, Kyle McAdams, Kim Vogley, Brian Shiro, Christoph Lechleitner, Lee Radke, Aaron Mays, Michael Carrier, Stephen Chambers, Kevin Lyle, Jeff Gentry, and Jeff Bayako. All of our episodes are on YouTube. Just search for Talk Through Media and remember to smash that subscribe button and ring that bell to get notified when we have new videos. Those videos go out first. That's the first way you can get our podcast episodes. They go out before the podcast does. Now, this week, I actually got the episode out roughly at the same time. That's really rare, but normally it can be, you know, a couple hours to even like half a day earlier. So subscribe to us there. That's the best way you can listen to the episode first. Everything we have through Talk Through Media can be found on the Talk Through Media all-inclusive feed, which also contains the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast, The Walking Dead Talk Through, which is on hiatus right now. And let's talk through our next episode of the Star Trek Discovery podcast is covering season 3, episode 12. What episode is it? The penultimate. One of Ruthie's favorite words.
My favorite word.
Yes. Season 3, episode 12, titled There Is a Tide. And it was originally titled, much like this episode, which had a different title, This one was originally titled The Good of the People, but now it's called There is a Tide. It is written by co-executive producer Kenneth Lynn and directed by everyone's favorite number one, Jonathan Frakes. And
the original number one.
The original number one. Well, not the original, but
yeah, not the original.
Yeah. The description, we don't have one, but we can guess it probably involves Osira and Federation headquarters and Discovery and Book and Burnham. Anyway.
Yep. All those things.
Yeah. So we see in the trailers, we see Osira with a gun pointed at Vance. So I assume they get there. And we see a whole bunch of stuff.
Since we're talking about spoileries right now, in the scene in the ready room, it showed Osira piloting the Discovery on the Federation's doorstep. Yeah. So they clearly jumped together somehow.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.